Hello, everybody. Welcome to Soul Up with Kayleen Welsh. This is Kayleen Welsh, and I'm here today with my friend Virginia Cooper. And I'm eager to talk with Virginia because we're going to talk today a bit about the changing face of spirituality. And Virginia's kind of had an interesting perspective of that over the years with her involvement with the Women in Spirituality Conference, of which she is the conference coordinator. And of course, that's an event that is held in Rochester coming up the first weekend in October. And we'll hear more of the details of that event as we talk. But I'd just like to say hello, Virginia, and welcome you to the podcast. And really glad you came over to talk with me today.
Hi, Kayleen. Thanks for having me. It's been a great honor and pleasure working with the conference and coordinating it. So something your listeners may remember hearing about the conference, it started in 1981 in Mankato, Minnesota, and it was held in Mankato for many years up until I think the last conference in Mankato was in 2016, and then it moved to Rochester at that time and was coordinated by Terry Allred, who had it for a couple years, and I worked with Terry. And then she got busy with life, and then I assumed the role of the mantle of leadership.
Is it 40 years? Is this year's conference the 40th anniversary? So it's been around for quite a long time.
Yeah.
I guess let's start, Virginia. Yeah, tell us about you and your interest in spirituality.
Well, you know, like many of us, I think I started questioning things when I was a young child. You know, who are we? Why are we on this planet? You know, what is this world all about? And I had somewhat of a religious upbringing. I went to Sunday school and we went to vacation Bible school. And there was parts of it that just, you know, the whole idea of the man on the clouds with the big white beard and the directing of our lives, and the idea that, yeah, that there was the man in the clouds that was going to judge or dictate or strike me down if I did wrong, or, you know, all of these kind of things, they just didn't feel like they were true. And I just felt that really strongly as a young child. And then as I grew up, I did have some, I guess what you could call paranormal experiences, things that happened that were, I guess still to this day, remain unexplained in terms of a physical explanation. But when you look at some of those experiences through the lens of spirituality, which is to say that there is life after death, there is an existence before we're born, that there are multiple dimensions, that there are otherworldly beings, whether they're angels or spirit guides or your guardian angel, that are kind of invisibly walking along with us in the world. You know, when you look at some of those experiences through the lens of that as being the bigger reality, why, then everything fits and it all makes sense. And now for me, there was a sense of balance, and there was a sense of a really strong yes of this is what's really happening. I've done a lot of work. I was worked for 25 years as a registered nurse. And throughout my nursing career, I'm retired now, but throughout my nursing career, I worked in geriatrics mostly. And I did several years as a hospice nurse for Gunderson Lutheran Hospital in La Crosse. And during that time, you know, you're close to people at the end of life. And you hear stories and you see things that happen that really affirm from someone else's perspective, you know, and not like in a woo-woo way, but in a, this is their reality, that people are going in and out of life at the end. They may appear to us to be sleeping, but they're talking and they're having conversations with people who've already died, as if those people are in the room. So, and there's the metaphors of people like packing their suitcases. We saw that a lot. People at the end stage of life, they're packing their suitcases. It's like, well, Grandma, where are you going? Well, I'm going home. Those things are just like the veils start to strip away, and then that other hidden truth, the hidden truth, is becomes re revealed.
Well, it sounds like, you had these experiences as a child, that were then validated or have been validated through your work with hospice as an adult. Can you go back to those childhood experiences and talk a little bit? Did you share them with anybody at the time? Did you feel like you were heard or validated in
No,
them?
I didn't, because I knew that the adults around me, my parents or any other adults around me, it was too risky. I didn't, I thought, I just didn't think they would understand, or that they would be there for me. That kind of goes along with the family setting that I grew up in. So no, they were just very, very personal also. Yeah, just personal, and not something that I wanted to share, or but certainly powerful, and certainly life-changing.
Well, and one of the things that I think about, even in doing this podcast, this idea of soul up, because I think with the busyness of our lives, or even the way that we've been conditioned in our culture and our family, spirituality has really either been, I don't know, something we do on Sundays, or this more livable spirituality has kind of been under the table. And so one of the things that I hope to do with this podcast even is bring some of this stuff more to the surface so that people are able to recognize and talk about these soul enhancing experiences that they've experienced or witnessed. They often seem like they slip out of consciousness. They're held very deeply by the person who experienced them. But then as soon as you start talking about them or sharing, people are quick to dismiss.
Right, we've all been cultured. The dominant culture doesn't accept that. The dominant culture that we're all brought up in says that if I can't see it, and I can't measure it, and I can't touch it or taste it or whatever, then it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Just really invalidates a lot of people's intuition. It invalidates our own inner knowing about things.
Well, and I'm really curious about how many people have had experiences similar to what you've talked about. I feel like I've had a couple myself, not a lot, but a couple significant experiences. And they certainly have touched me deeply. And I guess I want to say that I really hope that this enculturalization or whatever that we've all been under, this lid, I hope that it's shifting. That's what I really hope as we talk about this shift into fifth dimension consciousness, and that we are even talking about spirituality more. And certainly, even finding language is a little bit tricky, even using the word spiritual. It's like, I know that that evokes a lot of different things for a lot of different people. At the same time, I'm appreciating the way that you talked about it, even as far as just like, I don't know, transcendent types of states. Beyond the veil kind of experiences, things that are just right, like right outside our realm of consciousness. But as we rise in consciousness, I think that's one of the things that's I see as the changing face of spirituality is that more people are getting sensitized and maybe opening to some of these experiences. So I would hope that even having this conversation and you sharing a little bit about what you've experienced opens the door for other people to share more about these experiences and for all of us to come to a new sense of spirituality, life, these other dimensions, these greater opportunities we have to experience life.
Well, and I think we're absolutely seeing that with more the acceptance of, say, alternative and complementary therapies. We're seeing that has now infiltrated into mainstream medicine. That's a huge validation right there, because when you talk about that, now you're talking about, Reiki healing and therapeutic touch and things like that. Well, what is that? That's when a person allows themselves to be a conduit for that divine energy, that spiritual energy to come through us and through our heart and our hands into another person. That's a really sacred agreement that we have with people, and that's now become a lot more mainstream. So I think the opportunity is there, and as people see that more, like a very public gathering like the Women in Spirituality Conference, it also brings it into that level of, yeah, I'm not the only one over here questioning who am I? What is this world? What happened to me back there? What was this experience or this dream or what does it all mean? I know for me, I also had a real fascination with crystals my whole life. I'm a rock hound kind of person, and I love stones and I love rocks and I love nature. But I knew for many years that it was just like, there's something here. It was just a strong intuitive sort of feeling that I needed to look more. I needed to learn more. What is this fascination I have with crystals and stones? And so I started really doing some research and learning about the different energies of stones, and that they have vibrational healing potential because of their physical crystalline nature, and that there's a level at which the literal cosmic forces of the universe, coming through these stones and vibrating through these stones can affect us when we place them in our aura.
Yeah,
You
no, I
know?
love all that.
Yeah, you learn that, and then and it's just really cool.
And I would say the same for like flowers and plants and probably even animals, and they all have this innate energy that they bring. I just really feel like we live in a world of abundant blessings, and yet we've, certainly our share to not take care of it as well as we could. And yet I really hope we're learning. There's so many tools that we have, whether they're crystals or flowers or so many different ways to work with
Absolutely.
this.
Well, even like consider astrology. People say, well, that's just craziness. That doesn't, just because we all agree that, for instance, the planet Mercury is named Mercury after the Greek god who was all about communication, that's what the planet is all about. So it's just something that these old philosophers made up a long time ago. Well, sure, okay, that's one side of it, absolutely. But then when you consider the magnitude of these gigantic orbs that are hovering out in space, and the magnetic and the polarity influence that they have on us, on the tides of the planet, the effect of the moon on the planet, the effect of the moon on a woman's body, and how women menstruate oftentimes with the moon. These things really do influence us. And when you start to dive into that, you can see the patterns, and you can see that, oh my goodness, you know what? Yeah, it really, there is something there that's very real and measurable.
I'm thinking about human development, and if wherever we started as a species, I think it seems very clear that we started from this place of victim stance. This is where we really held the idea that God was doing something to us, and then we can step into the phase, well, wait a minute, it's like, well, my hands do something, I'm kind of a part of things here. And I think just that basically I have a place in creating my life. The next phase then is this idea that we become that like life is happening through me, that this bigger story of spirituality is coming through me. And of course, the fourth phase, this oneness consciousness, Christ consciousness, which, I don't know, as a species, and maybe there's a few individuals that are getting there, but I think overall we're not there yet. But it's
Right.
interesting to think about how I think organized religions probably served a purpose for these early stages of development. They tried to codify something, they tried to tell us something. They certainly got taken over by the patriarchy, and we definitely became this male god focus. So I think it's fascinating to watch and to see how this shifts as over the years we grow and evolve. And now we look at like trying to balance that out. Where does the goddess fit? You know, as we bring the goddess forward and back into spirituality, as we've evolved to the point where we recognize that, yeah, we are a part of this also. It's interesting to think about how the world changes and how our honoring or expression of spirituality changes.
That's a really you touched on a lot of subjects there. One thing I want to say is if you study the old historical old occult type documents, you know, that talk about like initiations into the old mystery schools, which all of that information at this stage, I think is, I mean, it's all sort of suspicious. You just don't know. You don't know. There's a lot of, oh, I guess fear-based impressions that have been placed on a lot of that kind of thing. But I do know that initiates in the old mystery schools would get to a level of adept and adept exemptus. And being an adept meant that you had reached the level of knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel. And so when you become an adept in the spiritual school, that means that you are an open channel for that voice of divinity. You know, you have conversation with these levels of hierarchical angelic beings, you know. I don't know as if at any one time that was more in alignment with like the pure love and light type of a thing. Well, I'm thinking about the old occultists like Aleister Crowley and some of those people. You know, you think about them now and you think, oh God, they were, you know, cavorting with the devil and they were bad and dark and evil and wrong and did drugs in order to get mystical experiences, and it's all suspicious. But I think there are some truths within that that are just, you can't ignore, such as knowledge and conversation of the Holy Guardian Angel. You know, what does that mean? Does that mean we've achieved the level of where we have telepathy? And it's real. It's not like, I think I know what you're thinking, but I know what you're thinking because I am at that level of perception, I guess. You know, whether you've got your ESP and your, you know, your intuition is to a level at which you can have that connection. It walks a fine line between that and madness, truthfully.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, I'm kind of marveling at the idea of I really took on somewhere along the line this idea that, you know, God is love. Somehow that's how I wrap my brain around this greater existence of whatever this mystery is. When we think about it, so much of our religious spiritual history has been fear-based. It's completely opposite love base, although that's kind of what they spoke about, right? I mean, that's what it was supposed to be. I guess I'm kind of just trying to sort that out in my mind right now.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. And I think that was one of the tools of the church to in their destruction of all the indigenous cultures and in all the indigenous ways, that the church became the dominant way, and that, you know, that no one can get to the Father except through me, that you had to go to the church and you had to go to the ministers in order to get close to God. You
Well,
know,
and
if you
that
look at
does, whoops, sorry, Virginia, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, that's fine. I was just going to say that the Mayan cultures, they had a rich culture and a rich way of life that was very, very spiritual and very sacred to the people. And the priest came in and they destroyed everything. There was one Mayan codex, and the codex were these handwritten books that they had created that showed the hierarchy of the heavens, that showed the richness of the Mayan calendar and all of this wealth of knowledge and information that these people carried. So, what was left was one codex that one of the priests had. He just, I guess, apparently felt guilty about destroying and burning all of them, so he kept one. Well, we have one. Everything else is gone. And so we have a little slice into the meaning of the Mayan calendar and the meaning of their way of looking at the cosmos, their way of understanding the universe.
When we look at the history of spirituality in that way, I mean, from my understanding, early people definitely had the relationship with Earth and the cosmos and the natural order of things, the rituals and the dancing and the celebrating and the just communion with nature, that whole connection. And then we really, seems to me, got off course, and I don't want to vilify organized religion because I know it's been, something that's important to many people. At the same time, I also recognize it's been something that's been wounding to many people. It does feel like as we are shifting as humanity, that, we are engaging in a more personal relationship, that whatever this spiritual mystery is, that, whether we're connecting through near-death experiences or witnessing or through some kind of, bliss experience or what, however we're connecting, it's more of a personal experience.
Right. Well, I think the thing that comes to my mind in thinking and listening, to what you're saying is that what the church did is the church really vilified and destroyed any type of language that we may have had, like such as astrology. What does astrology do? You look at the wheel of the astrology chart, the 12 houses. It talks about the different parts of our lives. Then we look at the planets and we assign meaning to the planets. We assign meaning to the signs, Pisces, Aquarius, Aries, whatever. And then we can watch as the planets, with their assigned meaning, travel through the different signs, and we can make sense out of the universe by looking at how things interact. The same way with the tarot. With the tarot cards, they're attributed to the ancient Jewish mysticism of the Kabbalah. Not a lot of people know that. And I'm not talking about oracle decks, and oracle decks are great, but I'm talking about specifically about the tarot. The ancient Jewish mystics had their what they call the gematria, which is the language that they use to talk about spirituality and to talk about some of these things that are now, like I say, hidden, mystical, occult. And they've been demonized, and they've been these shadows of doubt have been cast on these things. And it's a process of unraveling that. And what's happening now, which is another level of the walls that we have to knock down, is that we have this concept of cultural appropriation. And we have the white dominant white culture in the United States, who is obviously, we're seeking our enlightenment, we're seeking how to live a life that's in accordance with bigger values, such as living in harmony with the earth, such as finding our intuition, such as honing our own innate telepathy and some of these gifts that we're in healing and different gifts that we have. And in order to try to unearth what is our language, how do we talk about these things? How do we express them? What's right? What's not right? So we're looking to some of these ancient cultures, the remnants of the Native American teachings, the Mayan teachings, the Jewish mystical teachings, the Chinese have the I Ching, the Nordic cultures have the runes. We're looking at all these things for information and language. And then we are in turn, anybody that tries to practice these things as being, oh my goodness, that's just such a big no-no, because now we're like our colonizing dominator culture. We're culturally appropriating these things, making them our own. And so it makes people afraid to even explore something because, particularly on social media, they're going to get vilified for that. They're going to get shamed and accused of this wrongdoing. Now, there's also the extreme level of people who are sort of self-appointed shamans that maybe don't have real shamanic training, that maybe they watched a couple of YouTube videos and now they're a shaman and they're charging money for their shamanic services. Yeah, that we should be cautious about that. We need to be a savvy consumer of information, no matter where we are.
And yet it's interesting because I do think that there's even a shift sort of away from that guru kind of hierarchy. And I don't know what to say about so much of these challenges because I think you're so right. We're wanting to be respectful of all people and all practices. I will say from my history, one of the most important spiritual experiences that, and I think that shifted things for me was participation in Native American sweat lodges. But I'm not Native American. I mean, I wasn't trying to like culturally appropriate anything. I'm very grateful for the
Wow.
gift that I received from that experience. And so I hope that we can find our way through some of these things. Having these conversations probably are important so that we can find our way. And I just really am wondering is like, as people are stepping more into this personal spirituality, I think that's one of the things that come along with it is more of these experiences, deeper intuition. There's gifts that come along with these practices that I don't know, I guess I just appreciate people's interest. I think that there's a growing interest in all of these things.
Well, I think you really hit the nail on the head with what you're saying there, that the way of the following the guru, the way of the following the patriarchal, that way is I think a less viable path for most of us. I think that the spiritual seeker of today is looking for self-empowerment. We're looking to heal our wounds. We're looking to gain greater awareness, and we're looking to fine-tune our own intuition and our own ability, to be that channel for healing in the world, whatever form that takes. I know during the 80s, there was a really big trend towards, what is the work you're born to do? And so we certainly have, even like our last conference last year, our emphasis was on what is the work that you're born to do? Why did you choose to incarnate on this planet at this time with the people that are around you, with the life lessons that you have? And to make sense to that is to really navigate coming from all of the wounding that we received to becoming the person we were born to be, to do that work we were born to do. This year at the Women's Spirituality Conference, our theme is flow. So we're talking about how do we stay in the flow. So once we're doing the work, like I say, to unwind the wounds, to find self-empowerment, to find and tap into our own intuition, our own wisdom, our own healing energy that comes through all of us, then how do we stay in that? Once we're getting those glimmers, how do we stay in the flow and not let life knock us off course?
Yeah, it's one of the things that I appreciate about the Women in Spirituality Conference is the opportunity to connect with like-minded people and to have these conversations and explore these ideas. And I am recognizing even in my own community that I think it is because we're not finding how do I want to say this? I think as we embrace this more personal spirituality and have moved away some from the dogma of organized religion, don't go to church anymore, I think many of us are hungry for places to talk. There was a woman here just last year that, you know, was entering her 50th birthday. And one of the things that she so wanted to do was to get together with a circle of women to celebrate that sort of rite of passage. And so without the churches, we're kind of missing ritual and connection. But like places like the Women in Spirituality Conference offers that on a pretty big scale. And I'd like to think that we're finding pockets of that in our communities, different groups or organizations or practices that we engage in smaller groups.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. One of the, I'm just going to name drop here a little bit. There's an app out called the Divine Feminine app, and you can find it on wherever you get your apps on your phone. And that when you dive in and look, and this is national, it's all around the country, goddess circles, women's gatherings, you know, it's not 100% for women, but all the different events that are happening all around the corner are the country. That is, it's really affirming to see that, you know, that the interest we have in gathering and celebrating the seasons and celebrating our relationship with nature. I think, you know, if you were to take cross-culturally, across everyone that comes to the Women's Spirituality Conference, if there was one thread that ties us all together, I would say that most of the people that show up will say that nature is their church, that the connection with Mother Earth and the connection with the earth is a great source of spiritual fulfillment.
Well, and I think that fits right in with this idea that with this more personal engagement with spirituality or greater life, however we want to call that, is that it becomes less segmented. It's not something that we just go to church on Sunday and do. It's right. It becomes more of our ongoing life awareness. So when we're in nature or just even going through life and we feel this intuitive hit, or, you know, reconnecting with moon ceremonies or song circles or prone ceremonies or wherever we can, it just feels like that's such a great way to bring it into life. It's not just something we just do.
Well, and we're reclaiming what was stolen. I mean, I have ancestors that were in Massachusetts in the 1600s in this country. And certainly throughout, even older than that, you know, we all are connected with cultures that have ancestors that were literally burned alive, burned at the stake, tortured because they did something. Maybe they practiced herbalism. Maybe they were midwives who had some, what the church felt was hidden secret knowledge, and that to wrest control away from anyone, don't rely on nature. Nature is here for our gratification. I think for me, one thing that I really struggle with is the Christians that say that the earth is here for us to take and to use, which is completely opposed to the Native American viewpoint that says these are gifts and that we have to come in gratitude for what the earth gives us. And those are just two diametrically opposed ways of looking at life. And I think that's a really big thread right there that unites us into a more of a spiritual path and away from an organized religion path.
It feels so striking to think of it like that, because it feels like that rejection of, I'll say, Mother Earth aligns with the rejection of the goddess. That somewhere along the line, we just kind of like took out the value of women. And it's interesting, you know, so many things about that. One,
right.
I just heard the other day that the Jewish word Elohim the name for God is actually plural. You know, it's meant to be a plural being. It's not meant to be this like single divine masculine being. And it's interesting, even when you look at early Christian texts and the ideas around Sophia and the world mother that has been a part of every culture and tradition across centuries. So I'm hoping that as we re-engage the goddess, as we let the divine feminine qualities of joy, collaboration, cooperation, compassion, beauty, sensuality, care, as all these things emerge, that we will see a shift even in our care and attitude and the response of Mother Earth.
Well, in this time of, you know, what's becoming more and more evident that our modern way of life is destroying the planet, is destroying the climate, and in the end, we're going to destroy ourselves.
Yeah.
The time is now, you know.
The time is now. And so I guess having these conversations and reevaluating what spirituality is to us, if we are these complex, multidimensional beings, which I think of it always as we have physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual bodies. And, you know, how do we honor all of them? And what does that even really mean? You know, as we've disconnected from that spiritual sense and now we're trying to like come back into it, what does that even mean? You know, how does that show up in me? I think so much, and I think this is my Virgo person, but how do we bring heaven to earth? And so now we have the opportunity to gather and to express a different form of spirituality than we have been. And I'm so grateful again for places like the Women in Spirituality Conference, where we can come, explore new ideas, have conversations, talk amongst like-minded people, have our minds expanded and our consciousness lifted. And I know that when I leave events like that, I'm tingling. I mean, like energy is running and you can feel it. There is that connection with greater life that comes from participation in experiences like that. So before we give people information about the conference, I want to go back to what you said about, I don't remember exactly how you said it, but I am aware that this podcast will air on Friday the 13th. 13 has been vilified as an unlucky number. There's so much tie to the divine feminine that's been villainized. Friday, when you look at the, you know, who writes these stories, I don't know, but supposedly that was the day that Eve offered the apples to Adam, and women have been villainized ever since. Friday is the day for, you know, that Eve supposedly did this horrible thing that like set us all off on this path of, I don't know, evilizing women. And yet Friday also is Venus Day. You know, when you talk astrology, Venus is the sign, other than the moon, been the only representation of the divine feminine. So Venus is Friday day too. So we got Venus and Eve showing up on Friday. And then of course we got with the 13, the moons. There's 13 lunar periods in a cycle. I mean, where there's 13 in our year. And most women have 13 menstrual cycles in a year. We're a part of this natural order of this universe in more ways than we've really allowed ourselves to understand. Friday the 13th is a lucky day. It's a day for the divine feminine and a perfect day to be having this conversation.
I could not agree more. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and you know, primitive people before the advent of artificial lights and TV and things like that, how did you keep time? Well, you counted the moons. You counted the moons. You counted the seasons.
You watched the moon in the sky. You related to it essentially calendar.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Kayleen. I really appreciate you. And I'm so happy to have a chance to come out and talk about the conference. And for anybody that wants to know more about the conference, our website is womenandspirituality.org. And the conference will be held Friday, October 4th in the evening. We're going to have an opening celebration featuring our keynote, Lauren Rain. Lauren has been making goddess masks and goddess art and iconography for over 25 years. She's an amazing woman. She's coming to us from Arizona, and we're really pleased to have her with a ritual celebration Friday night, as well as we'll be talking about the conference and celebrating some of the women who have carried the conference through the years. And then the main conference, well, I should say the Friday night is going to be at the historic Chateau Theater in downtown Rochester. Starts 7 o'clock Friday night. And then the main conference is Saturday and Sunday
In
at,
Virginia,
yeah.
just a question in there. But before we go on to the main conference, I guess I just want to mention something. It feels like that ritual piece is important. That that's a piece that we've been missing too from organized religion. That, is how do we revitalize and what is the importance? It feels like those rituals, I don't know, anchor us somehow.
Well, yeah, the main intention is to bring in that goddess energy, to bring in, acknowledge, and openly welcome the energy of the divine feminine through the women that are wearing the masks, through the embodiment.
And in that vibrationalist space, we attune or we line up in some ways. We come into resonance as a group with that feminine energy and kind of lays the foundation then for the conference moving forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the Chateau Theater is it's a historic theater. It was created as a children's theater, so it's beautiful and magical with like a three-story ceiling. It's very sparkly. It has princess turrets, and it's just you feel like you've entered into just a really magical space.
Oh, I can't wait.
So we're really happy to be there Friday night. And then Saturday and Sunday we'll be at the St. Mary's University Cascade Meadows Environmental Center. And this is a facility that was created in Rochester on the site of some wetlands as an environmental center. And now it's been purchased by St. Mary's University. So it still functions as an environmental center and also as a university, which is really great because it's also it's the environment and it's the learning coming together in this magical, beautiful space there. There's 36 workshops all together. So when you go to register, you'll choose which workshops you want to take when you purchase your ticket.
I see.
So every session we have four that are inside and more academic. Every session, we have one that's very movement-based, like yoga, dance, tai chi, different things like that. And then every session, we have one that is outside. We'll have a walking labyrinth. Lauren Rain is going to have a beautiful art display of her masks throughout the weekend. We'll have a catered buffet lunch, and we'll do an opening ceremony also at the conference site. If you missed Friday night, you can only come for the weekend. We'll do a opening ceremony Saturday morning and then a closing ceremony Sunday afternoon.
I'm just looking over the list of workshop topics. It's interesting just because there's so many to choose from. It's so hard to even think about, oh boy, which one would I go to for that session? Because there's just a lot of great choices and a good variety. I like the way that and appreciate the fact that you're focusing on more academic in some ways, outside, more movement oriented in other ways, and how to really offer something that appeals, to this range of people that will attend.
Exactly. Because sometimes you want to sit and listen and learn, and other times, you want something that's more experiential. And so it's a nice way to balance throughout the weekend. And then we'll also have a beautiful vendor area with exhibitors and vendors that will be not only selling things, jewelry, rocks, crystals, books, tarot cards, all kinds of wonderful things. But we also will have people offering healing work. The Hermitage Farm Center for Healing in Rochester is also going to be bringing, I think, five different practitioners from their team to also offer massage and Reiki healing and some really great ways to rejuvenate yourself. For me, I went to the conference for many years, and I always felt that it was like a little pilgrimage for me and a time for my own spiritual retreat. So not only to find community and find like-minded individuals, but also for me to, to really seek more guidance from other people that are there, and to find my own way and find my own spiritual path. It's such an individual thing now, We don't say, oh, we're New Age. We don't say we're pagan. We don't say we're any of those labels, because once you put a label on it, then everyone assigns all these other meanings to it. And so it's very open. And just to be really transparent about it, we've had some conversations in the last couple of years about, well, now with all of the gender concerns and people, really flowing to different levels of this on the spectrum of gender, well, what is a woman anymore? You should change the name of Women's Spirituality Conference. Well, this has been our name since 1981, and this is our name, this is our brand. But who is welcome? Everyone is welcome. If you are drawn to learn about the divine feminine, if you are drawn to explore your spirituality in this way, through what is divine feminine centered, we are goddess centered, then here we are. So no one's excluded, I guess, is what I want to say, because I think
Yeah,
that's really important.
it is important, and I think what you're offering and is spiritual nourishment. That's what you're offering for anyone who feels like they align and want to partake. And
Exactly.
there's a lot of different options for being fed. And so, yeah, the community part of it, your own internal process. Knowledge, growth, guidance, connection, all of those pieces are gifts of the conference.
And that being said, there's something for everyone. We do have several of our workshops that are about, for instance, womb wisdom, the wisdom of the womb. Now, if someone is born a biological male and now identifies as female, would that workshop be appropriate for them if they've never had the experience of a womb? Probably not. Would they be asked to leave if they showed up? No. We're not going to ask anyone to leave. We're going to ask people to search in their own heart and soul to find out what's important to them.
Well, as someone who really believes that we as a world are at a place where it is time to embrace the light and release the dark, to shift this whole idea of spirituality and to really embrace how does this show up on the planet and how do we move away from the fear-based systems that we've all been engaged in or that we've all been influenced by, and open up to this more open, self-nourishing awareness of a greater experience of the mystery. And let's talk about it. Let's soul up.
Exactly.
Is there a registration deadline?
Yeah, we're going to close the registration, I believe, September 30th, just because we have to make the name tags and order the lunch and things like that. Yeah, I'm looking at the calendar now. We might actually close registration on September 28th.
Okay.
Well, and the other thing is, if you are interested, you should sign up sooner rather than later, because the workshops do fill up.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm sure there's probably popular presenters and everything else. So, okay. So we'll wrap it up. And if you want to go, September 28th is the registration deadline. And let's just say again the website. So it's womenandspirituality.org.
Correct.
Okay, and I'll be there talking about the feminine goddesses in astrology. So I hope you're able to show up. And
Oh,
Virginia, thanks a
mother's
lot for being here. We'll
gracious
see you all
and
next time.
always
Shine
sweet,
on.
with that voice sweet as honey. Birdie in the air, nothing can compare. You're worth more than the whole world's money. Just to hear that sweet voice even brings the bees joy. Pour it on me warm, sweet.
me one.